Well, we talked at some length last week about some of the questions that caused. Some of the
recording in progress
initially caused me to think about this as a part of our worldview, and I sent out the link to this article. It's just an interesting article to read, kind of makes you think about how really important our worldview is and how it determines a lot about what we do. We talked about some of these issues last week, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about profanity. And I think we're pretty clear, at least in some senses, that we don't want to be profane people. We don't want to take the name of the Lord in vain. We don't want to ever do the kinds of things that would put God in a bad light. We want to avoid some of those things. Now, Kim mentioned as we were talking Ephesians, the fifth chapter, and that's the place that I wanted to go. And so let's read Ephesians 5, and we're going to start at verse 1 and read down through verse 20. And I want you to kind of pick out those things that are things that we ought to put in our lives, and then by contrast, pick out some of those things that the apostle says we need to avoid. And it's just as important to put the things into our lives as it is to avoid some things. And the things that we want to avoid are not gross violations of God's will. I don't mean to say that we don't worry about that, but those, it seems to me, are not the kinds of things that give us a great deal of stress. They're things that we don't want to be engaged in, and for the most part, most people don't want to be engaged in those things. So we're going to read Ephesians 5, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the specifics that the apostle talks about. So let me read this, and I'm going to read this from the King James translation because that's what I was using when I looked at these specifics. He says in Ephesians 5, "Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as become saints. Neither filthiness or foolish talking or jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, covetous man who is an idolater, have any inheritance in the kingdom of God and of Christ, the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye, therefore, partakers with them. For you were sometimes darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Proving," and in the King James translation, that should be "showing what is acceptable unto the Lord. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it's a shame even to speak of those things that are done of them in secret. All things are approved, that are reproved, are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. Be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So let's go back and let's kind of focus on some things. Well, we're going to focus on the things that I picked out, things that need to be in our lives. These are not things that we avoid. This is the things that we really try to do, and we try to do them on a daily basis. So the first kind of language that I want to make a part of my life is what I saw as thankfulness. So this comes from verse 4. He talks about some things that you don't want, but then he says, rather give thanks. And I have to tell you, Kim is very good at reminding me that I need to be thankful and give God the credit for the things that he's doing and quit worrying quite so much about the things that he's not doing. And that's a struggle for me to learn to be thankful. I don't have a good definition of what thankfulness is. It kind of gets down to just being grateful for what we have. You know, there are so many examples of that, and so often I'm guilty of not being thankful. So let me open this up for comments. Is this as difficult for anybody else as it is for me? Or do you have some idea that'll help me remember to put that into my life?
One of the things that Dan May was talking about is in the entry of Jesus in on Palm Sunday was that they put their robes underneath to show submission. And he also quoted, I think they did the same sort of thing for Jehu. And when we're so thankful for what God does, that we're willing to let him be our head. It's sort of a quandary, because when we grow up, you're supposed to learn how to rule your life. You follow the rules, grow up, make up your mind, do things. And yet when you become a Christian, it's just the opposite. You have to learn how to humble yourself and choose wisely who you let be your head.
Good point.
I think thankfulness takes practice. We have to practice at being thankful.
That's what I was just thinking too, Anne. It's something like, seems like has to be habit forming, you know. You have to force yourself when things come up that are in the negative, you have to try to remind yourself, hey, I've got plenty to be thankful for. So, you know, give God the glory that he's due. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to remember always. But, yeah, you do have to force yourself to remember that because he's due it.
And I think it is difficult. I think it's difficult for a person who is used to doing things for themselves to accept help and to put myself in the position of needing to be thankful to someone or for something that someone has done.
Dean?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I don't often think of Job with thankfulness, but you know, when he said, I came into the world with nothing and I leave this world with nothing, in a way he's saying, I'm thankful for all of the things that you've given me, God. And he's doing this at a time when he lost all of his wealth and all of his children, and it looked like there was nothing to do, but there he was still honoring God with thankfulness.
Right. So it's a, you know, it's a lot more than just saying, well, I avoid scrupulously taking the Lord's name in vain. There's a lot more to thinking about language and about the thankfulness that we express than just simply avoiding some things. Well, let's go on. He says to walk circumspectly. And this is a behavior thing. This is not necessarily a language thing, although being circumspect in behavior also applies to our language. And I was trying to look for a good definition of this. Interestingly, this is the only time that this word that you see there is ever used in the New Testament. So I really don't have a way to go back and look at how it's used in some other place. So you have to turn to its use in secular language. And remember, the words of the Bible are not special. They were words that were in common use. This word, interestingly, in its most basic definition, means to be diligent. To take special pains to guard against the temptations that are around us to live as we ought to take special pains. So I was thinking about how would I illustrate that? Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the beginning of a sprint race, but the racers are so very diligent. They're so circumspect about making sure that they have everything lined up precisely the way that it ought to be. And they, you know, when I was in high school, we had to, in PE, we had to run a sprint race, and we had to start in those starting blocks. Well, those starting blocks didn't help me a bit. I don't know how they're supposed to be adjusted, but I see these guys that are Olympic quality athletes, and they're so diligent about making sure that those blocks are set exactly right And if it's off just a little bit, they'll go back and they'll set it again. And they'll make sure that everything is right. That's what I think circumspect is talking about. Yeah. You don't, most of the time we go through life, I go through life thinking, well, that's good enough for government work. You know, I'm not real careful. I remember I had a part-time job for a while and I worked in a machine shop and we made parts that were eventually going into the shuttle. The spacecraft, the shuttle. And we made a little cam follower. Now, because that thing is in the space shuttle, it has to be made to extremely tight tolerances. So I had to drill a half inch hole. And I remember the guy that I worked for, he said, did you drill a half inch hole in that? And I said, well, pretty close. He said, that's not the question I asked you. Did you drill a half inch hole in that? We had to be so precise that our measurements were plus or minus 1/100,000th of an inch. And that's really precise. But if you don't approach it with that kind of precision, the thing won't work when it goes up into space and it goes from, I don't know how hot it is on the sunny side of the shuttle. And then they actually roll that shuttle over so that part of it's in the sun and part of it's in the shade. And that's because of the extreme temperatures that they encounter. And you have to be that precise. That is being circumspect.
Dean?
Yeah.
Are you in verse 2? Is it walk in circumspect? Because mine says walk in love.
No, a little bit further down, he says, let me find where he uses this. It's in verse 15. He says, see then that you walk circumspectly.
Okay, thank you.
So I didn't take these things necessarily in order. I picked out the words, and they're somewhere in that reading. But I should probably have noted where those were.
Mm-hmm.
Dean?
Yeah.
If you think about the circumference, it's the distance around. So circum is you're looking in all directions, not just in front of you, not just behind you. You're so spect, you're looking, you're inspecting in all directions.
Good point. It's kind of like having your head on a swivel.
There you go. It's like an owl. Just turn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And paying attention. You know, I do some reading about personal safety. And I do that mostly because I work down here by myself in the office. And I'm frequently down here at night. And the observation that people have made is most of us go through life with our eyes glued to our iPhone. And that's just almost a prescription for getting mugged because you're not watching what's going on around you. So much so that I see people that their eyes are glued to their iPhone and they walk out in traffic. We've got to learn to get our eyes up and look and watch where we're going. And I think that's related to this idea that we are walking as wise people. Again, this is in verse 15. Not like fools, but like wise people. Again, this is the only time it's ever used in the New Testament, which is, it's a Greek word, so that's where it would be used. This is, again, a language behavior kind of combined thought. And when you look at the way that this word is used in secular language, it's forming the best plan and then using the best means for its execution. So it's having a plan and then working your plan. And I have a tendency, I don't know if anybody else is like me, but I have a tendency to sometimes start doing things without a plan. And then I usually get into trouble and I have to go back. And I could have avoided that if I'd had a plan in the first place. But I don't always form my plan. So I think that's the root meaning of this word. When we lived in Brookings, I used to do mountain search and rescue. And we were forever being called out to this, that just north of Brookings down in Curry County is the highest bridge on 101 in the state of Oregon. That bridge is 354 feet above the stream that's at the bottom of the canyon. And it's a really steep canyon. You go over that bridge kind of so quickly that you don't notice how deep that canyon is. But we used to have to rappel off of that bridge all the time to get people off of the canyon wall because they decided that they were going to climb down to the stream. And they always got stuck in the same place because they weren't thinking about where they were going to go next. So they would climb down. It was about 100 feet down. And then they got to a ledge and there was no way to get off of that ledge. And the problem was they couldn't come back up. They weren't strong enough to pull themselves up by their fingertips. And that's what it would take to get back up off of that ledge. So we would rappel down and pick them up. And then we always took them the rest of the way down to the stream at the bottom of the canyon. That's just not being wise. Don't start doing something unless you've got a plan. Anybody else have a way of illustrating that?
I just remember that all of wisdom comes from God, and it's not my wisdom that counts. And so when I think one way and I know he's thinking another, I'm wrong. So refresh.
That's a good point. But you have to think about it before you get started. So, you know, that's just not rushing in and thinking you're going to be okay. It's giving it some thought, forming the best plan, and then secondly, choosing the best means for its execution. If you have a plan that you're going to do something, you need to tool up before you get started. And every time I work on the car, I have to get Kim to come out in the garage and stand next to the car so she can hand me the things that I should have remembered to take underneath of the car in the first place. So she has to stand there and give me the tools that I, with a little forethought, I should have taken the tool with me. But I get down there and then I don't have the right tool. And what's worse is I forgot to take the socket with me that I'm going to need. And I think, well, you know, I can get that done with a pair of pliers. Bad idea. It's not having the best tool. So you want to use the best tool. You have to have a good plan, and you want to use the best tool. Now, this is a far cry from just, you know, avoiding taking God's name in vain. If I'm going to talk to somebody, I need to think carefully through what I'm going to say. And I'm, Kim will tell you, I'm really bad about opening my mouth before I engage my brain.
Yes, but Dean, you have to remember also that thinking about what you want to say when you're talking to somebody else, you have to be listening to what they're really asking, because what you want to say may not have anything to do with where they thought they were, what the question they were asking.
Oh, excellent point. Excellent point. And sometimes when somebody's trying to respond to me, I'm not really listening to what they say. I'm trying to rehearse in my head what I'm going to say next. That winds up two people who are supposed to be talking to each other, but their conversations never intersect. You're never going to get anywhere when that's the way you approach things. Good point, Carol. So this is a part of how we express ourselves. Okay. Now, here's some things that we avoid. These are the kinds of things that we think about. And I wanted to talk about the things that we should be doing first. And then these are the things that we try to avoid. So, first thing that we try to avoid is filthiness. This is in verse 4. There's the language in the original. Again, this word is not used anywhere else in the New Testament. So we can't look for parallel uses of this word. We're going to have to go back to what the definition was in secular usage. So it's obscene or indecent conversation. Literally, it's that which is shameful or that which is deformed. And there are, frankly, some things that are shameful. And that should not be the focus of our conversation. There's some question in my mind whether it should be a part of our discussion at all. But, you know, sometimes you talk about things that are filthy in order to specify what it is that you need to avoid. But then it becomes an illustration. So any thoughts about this idea? That we avoid filthiness.
Dean, I always go to the the quote where it talks about the man who steals. God doesn't just tell him to avoid. He says that you're supposed to get a job and you're supposed to go to work so that you can give to others who are in need. So it's not just a matter of figuring out what the filthy thing is that you're supposed to do, but you have to have the replacement. And that's the balance of the wisdom, is to get the replacement in there so you don't have a vacuum in the house.
No, that's a good point. That's why you always, when you talk about this, we always need to start with the things that we want to do. And if you are focused there, then avoiding filthiness or avoiding the shameful things or the indecent things is fairly easy, because you've already filled up your mind with things that ought to be there. Okay, next word, foolish talking. Again, doesn't help to look at other places where the word is used in the New Testament, because this is the only place it's used. This is, in secular usage, it's that kind of talk which is insipid, senseless, stupid, foolish, which is not suited to instruct or to edify or profit. And this one is hard. Don't be caught up in just foolish talking. One commentator I was reading said this is the idle chit-chat that is so endemic in our culture. It's talking about the weather. My grandfather was a farmer. He listened to the weather report every day because it was really important to him to know whether he ought to, you know, cut his hay and try to dry it out, because you don't do that if it's going to rain. So he focused on the weather report every time it would come out, come on the radio. And sometimes we have a tendency to talk about really unimportant things because it kind of fills the conversational void that would be there, that would invite us to talk about things that really mean something. The meaning is, again, this is another commentator who looked at this passage. The meaning is Christians should aim to have their conversation sensible, serious, and sincere. And I was reading just recently someone who was very disappointed in American culture, because we have filled up our time with television as opposed to reading. And he said, reading lends itself, the written word lends itself to the development of argument. Clear stated propositions. But TV doesn't do that. TV is such a mindless medium. And Kim has said before, you know, when you work in an office and you're you're so careful and so precise about the things that you write. Sometimes you just need to sit down and let your mind rest. And so you watch something mindless on TV. And I have a tendency to watch senseless violence because I just like it when the bad guy gets it in the end. And it could be that I'm wasting time. TV is just that kind of medium. I would argue that the internet is that kind of medium. The internet functions on the basis of memes. Little pithy things that people can say that that many of them are meaningless. And I think it would be good for us to remember what Jesus said when he said, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. That would make me choose my words more carefully. So this is avoiding foolish talking. Next is jesting. Again, nowhere else is this word used in the New Testament. So I looked for a definition. Well, this word jesting, see, Faye has a big advantage because she can think about it from different languages. But this word means, at its root, it means well turned. And I thought, well, you sometimes are said to turn a phrase. It's not a thing that I typically say, but it's something that's well turned. And then it's something that's sportive or refined or courteous. And then it came to mean urbanity or humor, wit. Then it came to mean jesting or levity. And I added this last one, and I'm not certain that it belongs here, but I think it does. It's a double entendre. Or perhaps a person who turns everything into a pun. And I think we need to think seriously about this. Not everything is a joke, and not everything should be turned into a joke. And I was laughing I think it was Amy Coney Barrett who was delivering a speech, and she was being heckled by somebody in the audience that was trying to accuse her of being a woman enslaver. And Amy Coney Barrett had a comeback. She said, I'm a mother of 7 children. Don't worry about it. I'm used to a lot of interruptions and even an occasional tantrum. And my thought was, whoa, I wish I was that quick on my feet that I could have that kind of comeback. And maybe that's not what I ought to be trying to do. The little witty, well-turned phrase that just kind of sticks the knife in and turns it just a little bit. I don't think I want to do that. Now, I'm not telling you that Amy Coney Barrett was jesting when she did that. I don't know. It's just a difficult word for me to know what is he really saying? Dean, avoid doing this. I'm not sure. I just don't know. Now, I do know that there's no sense in which we should try to be discourteous. I think courteousness ought to be a part of the way that we think. And 1 Peter 3 at verse 8, Peter says, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful or take pity on, and be courteous. So we're not talking about being ill-mannered. There are some people who just, they're just ill-mannered. They don't think about what they're saying and how it's going to sound. And because of that, I think he's not talking about being discourteous. He's talking about being light and trifling. He's not saying don't be cheerful. One commentator said, if anything is cheerful, it's the hope of heaven. So if you're going to talk about the hope of heaven, it's certainly going to bring cheer. And it's not avoiding being pleasant. One commentator said, I mean that quiet and gentle humor that arises from good nature, that makes one good natured. And I have known people that were like this. They always seem to say the right thing at the right time. And their whole purpose wasn't to make people laugh. Sometimes we did, but that wasn't their whole purpose in their conversation. Comments about jesting. Will you guys help me out here? Because we're out there on the edge of what I know, and we get past what I know pretty quickly here. So help me out, you guys. I'm sure that you've thought about some of these things.
Dean.
Yeah.
I was a class clown my whole life. And I got taken to the office many a time and spanked when they used one of those big wooden paddles. I'm sure you know about those, don't you?
Oh, no. I never became acquainted with one of those.
Yeah, right. I was good at turning the teacher's words around. You know, he's trying to teach, and he give the class like you're giving me something to say, and I could turn it around and the class would laugh. But then sometimes I got took to the office. So, you know, that's not a good thing to change people's, what is that, jesting or something?
I think that's what it is. It's just, you never take anything seriously.
Yes, that was me.
That was me.
That was you. Bad trouble.
Yes, it is. And it's just not worthy of what we are.
Oh no, I think about it today, and I'm still apologizing to them people, and them teachers are all, they're probably not even around anymore. But I think of the things I said and did, and I feel bad about it.
Yep. Okay. Not convenient. Finally, we got to a word that's used in some other places. So we can look at some other places to help us understand what it is to avoid the language that's not convenient. Romans 1 at verse 28. Can somebody read that one real quickly?
And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness. Whoops, I went too far.
That's okay, continue.
Being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, malice, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God, those who practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Yeah, your translation, instead of saying things that are not convenient, says things that are not proper. I at one time I had run across a discussion of this idea, and it was related to being things that were comfortable. I can't find it again, but there are some things that just they fit. I don't know if anybody else has ever sat in one of those. Well, I give myself away here. The old wooden chairs that they had outside of the principal's office. And they also had them in banks, and they had them in courthouses, and they had them in libraries. You know, it's a big old wooden oak chair. There's something about that chair that just fits me. That chair would be considered, for me, a comfortable chair or a convenient chair. No padding at all. It's just a hard oak chair. But it fits. And we kind of took the idea of being comfortable and turned it into something that's heavily padded. That's not it. It's the thing that fits. I think that's what it means to say that something is convenient. It just fits. So, what does that say about my language? It needs to fit what a Christian is. And above all else, a Christian understands that there is a lot at stake when we interact with other people. And what's at stake is more important than joking. It's more important than just levity. Now, we're cheerful, but we're redeemed. Not so that we can make a play on words. That's not it. But we're redeemed for other purposes than just making people laugh. That's not convenient. It's an odd kind of word. I like the word that Diane has in her translation, appropriate. We're soon going to be in heaven, and I don't think that a lot of the conversations that take up so much of our time here are the same conversations that we would be hearing if we were in heaven. The true course of life, someone said, is midway between moroseness and levity, between sourness and lightness, between harshness and jesting. He says, be benevolent, kind, cheerful, bland, courteous, but serious, solemn, thoughtful, deeply impressed with the presence of God and with eternal things, but pleasant. Someone said, think not a smile sinful, but think not levity and jesting harmless.
Say, Dean?
Yeah.
Paul says in Colossians 4:6, let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person.
Right. Right. That doesn't mean that I don't exchange pleasantries with people. But our speech ought to be appropriate to somebody who understands how serious the situation is. I think we can finish this up. We can at least finish this section up. Speaking of shameful things, or things that are done in secret. And I don't think our language ought to be consumed with things that are shameful. Romans 1 at verse 24, beginning all the way down through verse 32, he talks about what I think are shameful things. That, to say that we didn't take God's name in vain, doesn't mean that we didn't let ourselves be consumed by things that are done in secret, by shameful things. And I'd like to get the quick down and dirty definition that I have of this is, don't be constantly talking about things you wouldn't talk about with your grandmother. Everything that you say, you ought to be willing to say to your grandmother, face to face. When I was a school psych, I had a practice when kids would get sent to me because they were cussing out a teacher, I always had them dial their mother's phone number on my desk phone. And without even introducing themselves, they had to repeat what they had just said to a teacher. Sometimes that was pretty shocking. I had really tough guys that would break down in tears. I can't say that. No, that's all you get to say. And then we're going to have a conversation. I'm going to have a conversation with your mother about why you're going home today. You're being suspended for 3 days. There are things that we just we shouldn't be talking about. There's language that we should not be using. This is what the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5. He said, you have one in your midst who has his father's wife. This is something that's not even done among Gentiles. Let alone should it be done among Christians. And I think this is that's the point. You don't talk that way. Everybody remembers watching Forrest Gump, and Forrest Gump drinks a bunch of I don't remember what kind of cola it was, but he meets the president. The president says, "How are you feeling?" He says, "I gotta pee." You're not gonna say that. The reason that's kind of funny is because you're not gonna say that to the president. You just don't do that. It's not appropriate. There's nothing wrong with saying, I need to go to the bathroom. But that's not what you ought to be consumed. What ought to consume your conversation. Closing thoughts.
Dean.
Yeah.
It helps to train ourselves to remember that God is always with us. He knows everything we do, everything we say, everything we think, everything. And that helps sometimes to like stop sentences in mid-sentence.
It ought to. It ought to. Then and now, I will say this. I used to go to court because I was working as a clerk for some attorneys, and I would be in court fairly often. They never asked me to say anything, but I was there doing one thing or another, and there were times when what I heard come out of people's mouth in a courtroom was shocking. I wouldn't talk to my dog the way these people talk to a judge. And, I used to think, well, all you have to do is say that's just not appropriate. There are some people who fill their mind with that, and they will go on. And they'll talk about it. They'll talk about anything. And that's not the way that Christians ought to be.
I often hear people say, I don't have a filter on my mouth anymore. And I'm thinking, well, I think you better get one.
It's but, everywhere you go. Your friends, my friends, and I don't have a lot of friends, just at the gym and but it seems like that you want to clean up every conversation that you have had after you leave. It just seems like that no one, unless you're at church, it's a different world out there.
Yeah. There are people that I have conversations with, and immediately I start looking for a place to wash my hands. So I think there's this worldview that Christians have that we know where we're going. We know something about God, and that makes us behave in a certain way. So anyway, we will continue this discussion next week, and we'll talk about a few more of these words.